We're live.
Hey, yo, Taylor, did you see that that video on Joe Rogan with Robert Malone talking about mass formation psychosis? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, about how the mainstream media is like totally gaslighting us and brainwashing us into believing only what they say.
Right, right.
You are not being brainwashed. You are completely in control. There is no hypnosis. The mainstream media is your friend.
I am not being controlled. There is no hypnosis. The mainstream media is completely my friend. I am in control of my own thoughts and words.
Yes, you are.
Yes,
CNN
I am.
CNN viewer, you are a smart girl.
I am a very smart girl.
Good girl.
Okay, well, I didn't think it was going to go that far. My goodness. Guys, welcome to Will and Amala Live. I hope you guys are having a fantastic Monday. We have so many things to talk about today. We're going to talk about the issue of mass formation psychosis. Has that been happening in regard to COVID-19? And why are fact checkers saying that it's not? Novak Djokovic has won a really unprecedented case when it comes to COVID-19 and vaccine mandates over in Australia. But will it last? Plus, are transgender women beating out biological women in their accolades? And is this a problem? And we have Dear Will and Amala. So stick around for our advice segment today. Hope you make it to the end of the episode. Let's talk about mass formation psychosis. Here's a clip from Joe Rogan with his interview with Dr. Robert Malone talking about how COVID-19 seems to resemble mass formation psychosis in our current society.
Basically, European intellectual inquiry into what the heck happened in Germany in the 20s and 30s. You know, very intelligent, highly educated population, and they went barking mad. And how did that happen? The answer is mass formation psychosis. When you have a society that has become decoupled from each other and has free-floating anxiety and a sense that things don't make sense, we can't understand it, and then their attention gets focused by a leader or a series of events on one small point, just like hypnosis, they literally become hypnotized and can be led anywhere. And one of the aspects of that phenomena is the people that they identify as their leaders, the ones typically that come in and say, you have this pain and I can solve it for you. I and I alone, okay, can fix this problem for you, okay? Then they will lead, they will follow that person through, it doesn't matter whether they lie to him or whatever. The data are irrelevant. And furthermore, anybody who questions that narrative is to be immediately attacked. They are the other.
Ooh. Pause right there. There's not a wrong word was spoken there whatsoever. And we've talked about mass formation psychosis on this show before. We did a reaction to a video by Academy of Ideas about mass psychosis and related it to what's happening right now with the COVID-19 pandemic. And it's so true. You have this group of people who has identified a problem, the problem being COVID-19, and gone, okay, I can't figure this out by myself. Let me look up to the hierarchy. And the hierarchy would tell me exactly what to do. And whatever they say is gospel, regardless of whether or not it contradicts each other or if we find new facts in 2 years from now, or if the data completely negates everything that they're saying, I will follow exactly what they say.
Mm-hmm. Let's keep going. The video.
Yeah. Really great.
Yeah.
Okay, let's watch some more.
This is central to mass formation psychosis. And this is what has happened. We had all those conditions. If you remember back before 2019, everybody was complaining, the world doesn't make sense, blah, blah, blah. And we're all isolated from each other. We're all on our little tools. We're not connected socially anymore, except through social media. And then this thing happened and everybody focused on it. That is how mass formation psychosis happens. And that is what's happened here. Now, there's ways to get out of it. Matthias' recommendation is you got to get people to realize that what we've got is a situation of global totalitarianism. In his experience in Europe, making people realize there's a bigger threat than the virus can cause a separation psychologically in this fusion, this hypnosis that has happened. The problem is, then you're just substituting a bigger boogeyman from the current one, and somebody else can come in and manipulate that. The real problem, and it gets back to your core point, we're sick as a society, and we have to heal ourselves. And one of the things we have to do is come together. We have to recreate our social bonds. We have to buy into integrity, the importance of human dignity, and the importance of community.
Mm. That's a pretty hefty prescription for a society that is divided as we are.
Yeah, it's difficult to think that we just have to come together to fix things, especially when, you know, one side is doing things that are intolerable in some ways. I mean, the things that the elites in this country are doing to all of us normal people is, mm-hmm. is it's hard to say, oh, I want to come together with you. I mm-hmm. mean, it's more like I want to.
Well, he's saying we need to rebel against the elites, not come together with them.
Right. But so many, what I'm saying is a lot of people believe the ideas of the elites. You know, it's hard. So it's like those people believe the types of lies that are being told to them. That's how you have the mass formation psychosis in the first place, because people are believing those types of things. So it's a difficult proposition to have unity, right? It makes it very difficult for that.
And it's a tough thing to cut through. I mean, before you get to the unity stage, you have to get to the point where people realize that they've been lied to. And I think we are starting to get there. Again, like, we're seeing the narrative shift around COVID-19. We're now talking about proactive medicines and how different comorbidities attribute to how severe your COVID-19 is, which is a story that we're going to get to here shortly. But we're seeing the narrative shift from the media. We saw Brian Stelter on CNN say, is the media really, really out of the loop when it comes to what the society actually wants and what they view of COVID-19? And to hear him say that on CNN, Brian Stelter of all people, is an interesting thing. And it means something is shifting. And hopefully the shift is that people are getting over this 2-year stint of having their freedom stripped from them.
Well, look, there's a lot of polls that are coming out that not just from, you know, right-wing MAGA sources or anything. These are like mainstream polls that are saying the American people, what do they care about? They care about job security. They care about their families and they care about economics. They care about how far their dollar can go. Like on January 6th, I am glad that these people on the left are spending the entire day talking about January 6th insurrection or talking about, oh, you're going to die if you don't get the jab, like all these kind of things. I'm glad that they're talking about that, because what it is doing is forming their grave for them. It is digging their own grave, because most normal Americans don't care about those things anymore. 68% of Americans care about the economy more than they care about COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that Americans care about. They want to see their job get better and want to see more money in their pocket. So the fact that these people on the left and these elitists continue to focus on these things is just driving a deeper and deeper divot between us and them, essentially. So they can keep talking about that kind of stuff, but it's not the stuff that Americans really care about.
Yeah, it might not be, but guess what? We're getting fact-checked on calling what's happening right now mass formation psychosis. Reuters has come out and said this specifically. Let me quote it. Mass formation psychosis is not an academic term recognized by the field of psychology, nor is there evidence of any such phenomenon occurring during the COVID-19 pandemic. Multiple experts in crowd psychology have told Reuters.
Which is pretty crazy. If you listen to that Malone interview on Joe Rogan, I mean, he specifically, you can go back and listen, he specifically references a professor in Belgium, Professor Desmet, Matthias Desmet, who he references, who is someone who is, you know, this isn't a new thing, this mass formation psychosis. This is something that has been being researched since the 1800s. I mean, people like Freud were researching this. Gustave Le Bon, the scholar, was researching. Tons of people have been researching this for a very long time. Right, this isn't some new thing that we're just making up, but now that it's getting some sort of traction. I mean, it's the same steps that exactly like Dr. Malone talked about in there with mass formation psychosis. I'll read this to you from Dr. Desmet's book that he has about coming out about it, where he says, mass formation, a brief summary. Totalitarianism requires the total obedience of the mass. This obedience is created via mass formation process inside the population. The four conditions that are needed are the masses must feel alone and isolated, exactly what we have now. Their lives must feel pointless. All the nihilism we're seeing. The masses then must experience constant free-floating anxiety, again we're seeing, and they must experience free-floating frustration and aggression. Now that is what Professor Desmet says about all of this. This is something that has been within clinical study of psychology for the last 150 years. This isn't a new thing, right? But they want to now come and paint it because it's getting some traction and is like actually being shown as like, oh, this is all, you've fact-checked.
Yeah, to say it's not a recognized phenomenon, you just look at history, look at how any genocide has ever started. It starts with mass formation psychosis and convincing people of a common enemy and having them go for them in that way. Look at how witch hunts started, period. That's how we've all studied in school about the Salem witch trials and all of that. That is mass formation psychosis based on a delusion that is pushed and a narrative that is pushed in the society. So to say that this is not a recognized phenomenon and that it's not happening now is just delusional. And you guys linked a story here. Here's a headline. Teacher charged after putting her child in a trunk over fear he had COVID. that not psychosis?
I put that on there. I mean, that's ridiculous. You put a kid in a trunk of a car because you think that this kid might have COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, that is psychotic. That's not just psychosis. That's psychotic. That's evil.
Look at teachers in Chicago with a 90% vaccination rate who are refusing to go back to school and fighting for kids to be locked down in their households instead of going out and learning when we know that it's safe for them to go to school.
And now the teachers in Chicago, update to the story, the teachers in Chicago who are actually still going to work are getting doxxed because of going back to work. It's absolute craziness over there. How can you say that it's not psychosis? But one thing to note that's important is that, first of all, the guy with Reuters, people who are doing these fact checks, one of the guys on the board of Pfizer is actually the CEO of Reuters. So there you go. Makes a lot of sense why they would say mass formation psychosis isn't happening. Secondly, a lot of these media companies that are putting this kind of stuff out, especially like a Forbes magazine. Forbes magazine has major shareholders in China. Okay, so these people who are putting authoritarianism in their own governments, totalitarianism in their own governments, own these media companies that are coming and saying, oh, actually, this isn't happening. It's like, of course you're going to say this isn't happening because you're the ones who are in control of it. You're the ones who are controlling people. Like, but people don't understand that. People don't actually go back and look and say, this is, again, why people don't look at this stuff is because we are in this psychosis. Mm-hmm. And so people won't actually go and look at the facts of, like, who owns these companies that's saying these kind of things? Why would they say this? Why would they fact check something that's basically a 30-second piece on a three-hour-long interview?
Yep.
Right? Like, there is a reason for all of this. Look into the reasons and understand why. And you're going to, and also Google, if you saw what happened when this first came out, Google changed the search results on this so that you couldn't search for mass formation psychosis. You wouldn't get clear results on what it actually was.
And the motive is there. They're scared. They're scared. The Reuters article itself cites online searches for the phrase have spiked this month after this podcast from Joe Rogan came out. They are so scared that people are going to look into what is actually happening to them, what is actually affecting them, and they're going to break free of the mass psychosis that has been set in place here. And that's why these fact checks come out. That's why they start changing Google searches. They don't want you to find out how subjugated you actually are.
No, because then if you find out how subjugated you are, then you might have a chance to change it.
Right.
And if you have a chance to change it, then you are no longer controlled. You are no longer hypnotized by these people.
Right.
Right? They can't let you know.
Yep.
This is why they're working so hard, tirelessly, every day. This is why I say, when I talk about conservatives and Christians and what we need to do, that we need to have a work ethic like the left. Because on Christmas Day, the left is going out and registering people to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? What are conservatives doing? I understand you want to spend time with your family and do stuff. But I'm saying, like, these people have a work ethic and the reasoning behind what they do is different than the right. The left is willing to do all of these things and work really, really hard. I respect fighters. I respect someone like Stacey Abrams. I think she's evil. I think a lot of the things she talks about are horrible. But I respect someone who goes out and fights. And that's what these people in the media are doing. They are working tirelessly to control you and confuse you every single day.
Yep. And it reminds me of Yeonmi Park, we've had on the show, a North Korean defector, and she talks about how true oppression is not knowing that you're oppressed. So there's a real big reason they're changing these search results and not wanting you to be informed about what mass psychosis means, because once you realize you're in the bubble, you're going to want to break out of it. And they don't want you to realize where you are. They want you to hold the narrative and think, these horrible people that are trying to convince me of my own psychosis want to harm me, and they're incompassionate. It's actually the exact opposite. And the moment that you learn that is the moment the whole system falls apart. So that's exactly why they're trying to hold this at bay.
I know. That's why we all got to walk together.
It's true. And somebody who's been taking the walk, if not taking a leap here, is Novak Djokovic. We saw that he was detained in Australia after intending to go and play at the Australian Open. They held him back because he's unvaccinated, even though he had medical exemptions from doctors in Serbia who had written off that he was able to go into Australia with his visa. And now he has won his initial lawsuit here, and they have now reinstated his visa into Australia. It's looking like he has the possibility of playing in the Australian Open. However, it is not set in stone yet. The Australian government says that they are still pending investigation into Djokovic and reserve the right to revoke his visa a second time.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly what's going to happen with that if they're going to do something like that. But again, this is why it's not a left versus right type of thing when it comes to this kind of stuff. It is the elites versus everyone else, okay? It is the elites versus the normal people. Because they want to now paint, I mean, if you can look at this New York Times article that came out today, it was an opinion piece on the New York Times that I was reading about. And it's just this garbage opinion piece about how Novak Djokovic is hurting people and he gets special standards and because he's a world greatest athlete and all this, you know, basically trying to place Novak as this elitist type of guy, right? Because he's a world professional athlete. I mean, Novak Djokovic is a true rags to riches story, if you know about him. I mean, growing up in Belgrade and playing tennis between bombing raids, Right? He would have to go out onto the courts to practice playing tennis in between bombing raids and was able to develop these amazing skills to now be one of the greatest athletes of all time.
Yep.
Right? Like to claim that he is one of these elitist people is just nonsense. But they want to paint him that way. They want to pit you and say, oh, he's this type of person because he's the world's greatest athlete. But really, he's been fighting against this stuff since the beginning, since April of 2020.
Right.
He's been saying, I want to do what I want with my body. He's been saying this the whole time.
And he's brave for doing so. I want to read you some of the stuff that was said in this article. A couple paragraphs here. Athletes have been scorned by some of their... by some for their views. Meanwhile, they get more attention, won more games that expanded their platform for promoting widely discredited science. Many of these athletes' fans have rallied to express their support for the stars that they identify with. This opinion piece also writes, and that's why it's disappointing to see sports bodies fail to exert the one lever of control that they retain, whether or not the athletes are allowed to compete. And this shows you the sort of I wouldn't even call it soft totalitarianism, that they're advocating for. They want these sports bodies to go, no, you made an independent decision about your body and what medical treatment you receive. You're no longer allowed to play the sport. And they go on to criticize Djokovic and other athletes, Kyrie Irving for not getting vaccinated, Draymond Green for not being vaccinated. And it's so interesting to me to see a singular person like Djokovic or Irving go against a massive institution and say, no, this is not right. And they get chastised for what they've done. And the question is that they claim in this article is, why are these institutions allowing the athletes to play? What you should be asking yourself is, why is it okay for the athletes to play? And what is the faulty nature of the narrative that it's okay for these athletes to play? Because clearly, if it was posing a real threat to someone's life or to their health, they would not allow Djokovic to play. But it doesn't. So he will be there and he will be released into Australia. You should be questioning the system, not the individual who goes against it.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope. I really hope that that's the case. But you know what this reminds me of? Anyone, some of our older viewers, you might remember this. Back in the day, you had Muhammad Ali, who's a great boxer, right? But one of the greatest athletes of all time. And Muhammad Ali basically said no to the draft. He said no to joining the armed services and at the time was looked at as this horrible, terrible guy. Mm-hmm. Okay, but now people are looking back at Muhammad Ali in his life and saying this is one of the bravest people ever, speaking out against the war and doing all this and being incredibly brave about it, right? So Novak Djokovic right now, he has been totally consistent the entire time across COVID. He hasn't changed his stance. He's been on it the entire time. And so I think that he's being looked at terribly now by the mainstream media and the elites and all these people. But in time, throughout history, people will have a different tune when they actually look at this down the road, just like they did with Muhammad Ali and his stance, even though he was exiled from boxing and all this other stuff. They will be the same with Djokovic. So as long as he continues to stay consistent with what he's doing, which it looks like he is, and he's an incredible guy, everything he's doing, I think that history will tell the true story of what he's doing.
Right. And remember, it's not over. They're still reserving the right to strip him of his visa a second time, and that will go to a court again. And if this goes through, so if they decide to strip him of his visa a second time, he runs the risk of not being allowed to go to Australia for the next 3 years, which is a really, really big infringement upon his freedom. So it'll be interesting to see. I want to show this last video in regard to Djokovic, and this is the people who have rallied for him in the streets during this case. Hundreds of people taking to the streets in Australia trying to get him freed from what is not now being seen as detention, but imprisonment for this.
I know.
Yeah.
It kind of sounded like they're saying Frito-Lay. like the
Frito-Lay.
Chips.
Yeah. Frito-Lay. Yeah.
We want chips.
give us our Funyuns.
Yeah. Please, please, please.
We've been waiting.
Yeah.
No, it's incredible. But that's what it takes. It takes people to come and stand up and not just let Djokovic take it all on him, but for people, normal people, to come and say, hey, we agree with this.
Yep.
We agree with what Djokovic is doing, and we're going to come out and show our support.
Absolutely.
Right? You can't just be a one-man martyr, and it doesn't change anything. You need the support of other people.
Absolutely.
I talked about that on my blog this week. I talked about how as Christians, you know, the left has a distinct plan, and they say, we are all going to come together. We need complete conformity. We need unity. Excuse me. And the people on the left come together to be this type of big group, whereas we have millions of Christians across the country and conservatives who do not come together that way to to push for the things that we believe in. We need people to say, hey, Djokovic is doing something great, or this politic or whatever is doing something great. We need to stand behind that person, mm-hmm. right? We need to unify more.
Yeah, and if you're still unsure about what you should be rallying behind, here's one more layer to the COVID story. The CDC director has come out and said this. I'm not even going to rephrase it. Here's her own words.
The overwhelming number of deaths, over 75%, occurred in people who had at least four comorbidities. So really, these are people who were unwell to begin with. The overwhelming
number... Amazing. 2 years later, ladies and gentlemen, 75% of COVID deaths happen with people with four or more comorbidities. That's four or more pre-existing conditions. Just insane. And we've been saying this for so long. And now finally, the CDC director comes out and says this. And I made a video about this earlier this morning. And this 10-second clip alone should raise so many questions for people. Why was our entire economy shut down for the sake of this disease? Why did we not let our healthy children go to school? Why were we not focusing on lifestyle and proactive health? Instead, we focused on reactive health and being vaccinated and having McDonald's and Krispy Kreme tell us that we need to get vaccinated. So many questions should be answered because of this 10-second clip, and she should be forced to answer them.
It makes my blood boil. It makes me too mad to even talk almost.
Yep.
Because
it's frustrating.
Because I have been saying these kind of things for the past year, mm-hmm. year and a half. I mean, coming and saying these things and having people who are conservative come and tell me and say, no, you can't say those things. Those are the crazy things. Well, you're a conspiracy theorist for coming and saying those things. I've been saying these things for a long time. And now it has got to a point where it is now mainstream to say these kind of things. Yep. And it's so frustrating to see mm-hmm. the amount of people who got banned off of social media, the people who got shadow banned, the people whose accounts were taken down or who were told that they were crazy or conspiracy theorists or any of this kind of stuff for saying exactly that.
Yep.
It's horrible. It's true. It's so bad. I mean, to say that there is no, going back to the beginning of the show, to say there's no mass formation psychosis when there were people who were telling the truth about all of this at the beginning and saying these things were happening, and to get labeled a conspiracy theorist and this horrible, crazy person, mm-hmm. now to say it's just totally true, I mean, it truly makes my blood boil.
Yep.
It makes me so angry to see this because they have ruined people's lives.
Yep. And they'll never pay the price for it. They will never be held accountable for it. They get to now rewrite the entire narrative that we've been subjected to these entire 2 years. And then they'll get the pat on the back for if this ever ends, which it won't. But if it ever ends, they'll get the pat on the back for it ending.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know. It's just so upsetting.
Yeah, it is.
It's really upsetting because there are so many great people saying the truth for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just been written off as these terrible, crazy, conspiracy theorist types of people. And then the truth comes out and... it's just like I told you so, but it's too late at that point.
Right.
Because people's lives have been lost. People's businesses and money have been ruined. Their social status and their entire portfolio and reputation have been irreparably destroyed. And all of that because these people wouldn't admit the truth.
Yep. You know, and here we are.
These people, like, no, these people aren't going to get their wealth back. They're not going to get their reputations back.
Their businesses? They're
not any of this stuff back. No one's going to get it back. I mean, I'm not going to get a ton of the stuff back from what I said before and people thinking things about me that they now label me as. I mean, I'm not going to get any of that back.
Mm-hmm.
But now they can come and say this and say that this is the truth, even though we've been saying things like this forever. Even the CEO of Pfizer today, I think it was on CNBC. It was on CNBC or CBS, which was, they didn't post any clips on social media because of what this guy said. I urge all of you guys to watch it. It might be behind a paywall, but I urge you to go and watch it. And what this guy said essentially was that these mRNA shots, they don't actually have the efficacy that we thought they were. The studies that Pfizer carried out that said, oh, these have 100% efficacy for stopping it, mm-hmm. they actually don't. This is a CEO of Pfizer actually like dropping truth bombs on people mm-hmm. and saying these kind of things. And it's like, I said that 6 months ago and then I got banned.
Yep.
So it's like, now they can come out and say this stuff, but mm-hmm. I couldn't say it before. It is so frustrating. It is so upsetting because they've ruined people's lives.
So many.
Genuinely.
Millions of lives, not just here in the United States, worldwide. Yeah. Worldwide.
I read today that a third of the restaurants in Los Angeles are permanently closed, and two-thirds of people lost their jobs, restaurant workers lost their jobs in the course of the pandemic, so stuff like that. And you think about all of the missed cancer diagnoses, the missed hospital visits for people with other serious problems, and that's why all-cause mortality is surging in this past year. So there's a real human cost to all this, not to mention everything that kids have had to go through and just all the hysteria, the psychological damage from that, the depression, suicide rates from people being locked down in their homes. Like, it just goes on and on and on, just the damage all over something that they're now admitting was just a blanket, one-size-fits-all, harsh, overbroad lockdown measures that ended up just destroying so many lives.
Yep, and let's not forget, all while they lived their normal lives the past 2 years. Let's not forget that. While you guys were following all the regulations and the mandates and the lockdowns and not running your businesses and not sending your kids to school, they were doing the exact opposite.
Well, you delivered their Uber Eats.
Right, right. Yeah. Right. You delivered them their food and you served them at the French Laundry when they went out and broke their own COVID restrictions.
Well, you wore a mask and they didn't. Sorry.
Right, right. Yeah, you wore the masks. You wore the masks at all the different award shows and at the Met Gala while they all pranced around and got paid to do it.
They're feckless, they're weak, they're losers, they're selfish, all of these people, and screw you. I don't have anything better to say, but that is truly it. And now we have to deal with the consequences of your stupidity.
Yeah.
Of your not being able to take responsibility. We have to deal with it, not you. And you're not going to be held accountable. I can see that already. I don't need to hold out false promises that something's going to happen or tell the audience here who's watching and say, oh, something's going to happen to these people for sure. Nothing's probably going to happen to them. But now I hope that you have to live with that. I hope that you, CDC director and Dr. Fauci and all of you guys, I hope that on your conscience, you can see the lives of millions of people that you have ruined.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you have done, not just in terms of like what Taylor was talking about with the economy and our own health and things like that, but just people's mentalities about each other, mm-hmm. about me going and looking at someone else mm-hmm. and not thinking that this person might be a germ mm-hmm. ready to spread to me in a disease. Mm-hmm. And the way we look at someone when we go to a sports game or a theater or anything, you have threatened to ruin America and the rest of the world because of your lies.
People are putting their children in the trunks of the cars.
Exactly.
And it's like funny how absurd it is, but it's also not funny.
Right.
I hope that it is on your conscience. I hope you cannot sleep at night. You have blood on your hands, all of you. You are terrible people, the things that you have done. Evil.
And that's where we close out our COVID news, ladies and gentlemen.
Melissa cut me off. Okay.
Yeah. Eventually, at some point I do. Right. A few more stories here before we get to Dear Will and Amala. The modern day feminist movement has really, really shifted. And there's a few headlines that I want to show you that just are such a clear depiction of the shift in feminism here. Here's headline number one. At Penn, transgender swimmer Leah Thomas, who we've covered before, sets the pace and stirs debate. She's only now been beaten once by a transgender man. So a biological female who's transitioning to be a man has now beat Leah Thomas in a race. But other than that, she has been the front runner when it comes to Penn State swimming and has beat out every female that she has played against. This next one here, trans woman winner MJ Rodriguez wins the Golden Globe for Best Actress in a TV Drama. So that's yet another female accolade given to a transgender woman. And lastly, here we have Amy Schneider from Jeopardy, who is now the highest earning woman in Jeopardy history, hitting past the $1 million mark, also a trans woman.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
I'm just really proud. As a man, I'm just really proud of all the men that have won these awards. I'm very proud.
Oh, it's just so interesting to see it and to watch what would be considered the radical feminist movement back this so quickly and so adamantly is very, very interesting. For so long, the left complained about how men were usurping women's power and privilege when it came to their accolades, what they were able to achieve, what they were able to go after in their careers. And now we see those very same women who fought for that right, so they would say, back biological males who have now entered their sports teams, their competitions, their scholarships, and say, no, that's a real woman. And I would love for that person to take away that accolade from me and take it from a biological female who does not have the same shot in this competition.
No, none of it makes any sense.
Yep.
It's just like so stupid.
Yep.
all of these men are winning these competitions, and then they claim that it's women, but then many of the women who are within these competitions say this isn't fair. So yeah. You're sacrificing the true competitiveness of whatever it is these people are winning for your virtuous wokeness, and you're ruining all these different things. Yeah. I mean, none of them are sacred anymore. You know, not like anyone cared about the Grammys, regardless.
Right, right.
But, you know, they mattered to that person who could have won.
Yep.
You know?
You are essentially Xing actual females out of the market of these different awards. So how does that look, especially when we look at sports and in academia when it comes to this? Because you are taking girls who you've told through the radical feminist movement, you need to pursue, get into your career. And when they do that and they go to school and they do the athletics, which is not typical for women, and they go and pursue these dreams, you then go, actually, it's a little bit better if I give it to the trans woman than it is. So I know I encouraged you to do these things and to go against what is often your better nature and to do these things. But now that we have a trans woman in the spot, I'm going to have to give it to her. Sorry, because nobody can embrace womanhood better than a biological male.
I don't know.
And I thought these people believe in you know, protecting and defending women, when like this last week what the Ivy League came out, the official Ivy League organization came out and did a statement supporting what they're doing with the trans swimmers in the Ivy League schools.
Yeah. And outright, and we want to talk about denying science, especially when it comes to this pandemic, outright saying that transgender women bear no difference to biological women physically. Are you kidding me? Leah Thomas, I believe, is 6'1", and is now the highest female swimmer for Penn State. You're going to tell me the wingspan isn't different? You're going to tell me the strength isn't different when it comes to what they do? It is absolutely ridiculous. And again, it shows what wokeism truly is, and it is that you are the victim for now. And as soon as we move on from you, and we find a more marginalized group, you will fall by the wayside, and we will no longer care about how successful you are. We will care about how successful this group is. And let it be known, transgenders are the victims for now. That'll change too. It's going to move on.
The revolution always destroys its own. They always do. Mm-hmm. You know, it started with women, and women were the oppressed group. Okay, let's get women's rights. They get women's rights. Well, now it's about trans rights. And now, who cares about women now? Mm-hmm. Now let's just focus on the
gay
trans
people
rights.
Too. The trans is like the gay people who find themselves mistreated and like underrepresented even within the trans, like the LGBTQ plus IA.
Yes.
If you're gay lesbian, that's like really old news. And like lesbians are now, you're a homophobe or whatever if you won't date a trans woman or what. You know, they just, like you said, they eat themselves.
Right. No, I'm transphobic if I don't date a man who turned into a woman.
Yep.
Right.
That's just ridiculous. I mean, to think that I have to date someone with a penis, otherwise I am transphobic.
Mm-hmm. Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the new world.
Oh.
And this is our smartest people, by the way, our Ivy League smartest people elites who are coming up with this stuff and telling us this is reality. It goes back to
this
the
is
mass-
why you don't believe the elites. Yeah. This is why these people are so dumb. Looking at the Supreme Court last week with Sotomayor coming out and saying there are 100,000 children who are on ventilators right now. This is your Supreme Court justice.
Yeah.
And this is what this person is saying.
Yeah.
They've been watching too much Whoopi Goldberg, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
They need to watch actually Dr. Malone or any of these other people. I mean, it is ridiculous that these people who are heralded as experts absolutely know nothing about what is going on, actually.
Yep. Gosh.
Even the Ivy League institutions, you know?
But
I mean,
science.
Harvard used to be in a beautiful, amazing place. I mean, these institutions in America, Yale, Columbia, Harvard, Princeton, Stanford, I mean, these were the pinnacles of worldly success. That you would go to one of these places and study and you would be the top of your game.
Mm-hmm.
And the top of the world, really, for any sort of academics. And now when I hear that someone went to Harvard or Stanford, I'm like, oh my goodness, you're an idiot. Like, I'm like, you, the things that you probably learned at that place ruined you, you know?
It's unfortunate.
I'm like, I care much more about the values that you have than about going to a certain school or being this sort of Ivy League person. Where more that used to matter before. There were things where those places actually built good character and were the best of their class, but now they're not. They're ruined. They're ruined, and they're ruined by experts.
And it's important to say that nothing that we say about any of this is out of hate. It's actually out of love for the people who are being affected by this. And to just go along with this narrative for the sake of virtue is truly harming people. It is not doing good for people. And that's what you should care about, is whether or not you do harm. And if you care enough to advocate for these communities, you should care enough to do the research to find out if your advocacy is truly helpful. And more often than not, when it comes to what the woke narrative is, it's not helpful at all. That's it. That's it. So truly look into whether or not what you're doing. When I was a leftist, I just towed the line. You're just like, okay, somebody told me to say this. I'm going to go and say this. It must be helping people because I got told it was helping people. And the second you take a moment to go and just do a little bit of research into what you're doing, you'll go, oh, shoot. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to admit that maybe I was contributing to something that was harmful, but you have to admit it.
Right. Well, now we have the same thing with conservatives.
Yep.
You know, the left are the real transphobes. We support all this, you know.
It's just an issue.
You can't
with,
muddle it and be like the left either.
No, it's an issue with picking sides in general. This. It's just like, look for truth. Look for truth. And whatever side that falls on is the side that it falls on. You don't have to consign yourself to something and go, well, I believe everything that these people say now because I said I was this. No, just look for objectivity. Look for what the truth is. And when you find that, speak that. And try not to cause harm.
That's where the mass psychosis thing comes from, is this whole idea of believe what we say, not what you see with your own eyes.
Yep.
That is gaslighting. That is how you are vulnerable to mass psychosis. When you outsource your own ability to think critically and look at facts for yourself to authority figures or to someone who says, don't think for yourself. Don't look at the facts for yourself. Mm-hmm. Just listen to us and we'll reinforce it. In fact, you heard that we might not be trustworthy. We might be brainwashing you. Well, here's a fact check that we came up with to check ourselves to verify that you are not being brainwashed by us. So it's like,
Yeah. I am not punching you in the face right now. I promise, okay?
Right.
No, you're not punching me.
And so just look. Stupid. And sometimes conservatives are going to be right. Sometimes liberals and progressivists are going to be right. And just, as long as you find that yourself, I don't care. As long as you do your own stuff, I don't care. Just please search instead of just parroting what other people say.
Well, liberals and progressives aren't right.
I'm not saying they're right more often than we are.
Right.
But I'm saying they can be. But just look for yourself. Just look. That's all I'm asking of anybody.
Right-wing communism. That's what it's all about.
That's what we're really here to sell you on, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's tell you.
Now, before we get into Dear Will and Amala, our advice segment that we do every Monday, which you guys can submit questions through our Instagrams at The Will Witt, at The Amala Benobi, at Taylor Trandall, and at PragerU, we saw this little piece that Will sent over to us on Twitter, and we just want to have a discussion about this. So a black man by the name of Broderick Hunter tweeted out, there's a certain level of intellect required to enjoy certain things. You can't break down Beethoven's symphonic algorithm to someone that only listens to trap and expect them to catch the vibe. Same with movies and shows, everything. Now, Steve, who is seemingly a white man, responded, hi, musicologist
I hate
here.
That. I hate people. First of all, sorry. I hate people who do that. Like a snarky, you sound like, it's so bad. When like a man is responding to something and says, hi, I hate that. It drives me insane.
So immediately Will dislikes the comment.
Yes, immediately. I hate that. You know what I'm talking about? Do you hate that?
Yeah.
It's the worst.
Then he goes straight to musicologist here. Like, here's my credential. I did a little bachelor's degree in this thing.
Here's my appeal
I'm
to authority. Here's my immediate appeal to authority. He says, hi, musicologist here, praising Beethoven and denouncing trap is super gross and reinscribes white supremacist power structures. It's not quote unquote intellect, but rather quote unquote commitment to a white art that is required to make this claim. Thanks. Have a good day. So this is what a white man responded to a black man about these issues. Not even issues, just music in general.
Right.
I thought it brought up an interesting discussion. Does Beethoven's symphonic algorithm require more intellect than Megan Thee Stallion's, I don't even know a name of her song. Mm-hmm.
Doing drugs in the trap. Got a gun.
Right.
To say that, you know, obviously it's a great piece of work. You know, saying that your vagina is like mixing macaroni in a pot.
Okay.
It's truly beautiful.
We didn't need that vivid imagery.
Well, that's what they say. Well. And it's art. So obviously you're a white supremacist.
Yeah.
Because mixing macaroni in
okay,
a pot.
Okay.
That's enough. That's what it's all about. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Right? I mean, to compare to Vivaldi's Four Seasons, I mean, it's not
It's
not even comparable. Nothing I like more than Migos is, you know.
And Travis Scott's Butterfly Effect.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing better. And this is coming from three people who are fans of rap music. Maybe Will and I more so than Taylor, but we all listen to rap music pretty avidly.
Right. No,
you mean crap music?
My grandfather would say, what's that racket?
Yeah, no, so would mine. Listen, no, there's a lot of good hip-hop out there and a lot of good stuff that, you know, a lot of smart people put in the time and the work to make, of course. But I mean, to deny Beethoven or Bach or Vivaldi or Chopin or like any of these people just because they're white, or, you know, Mozart, any of these people.
Yeah.
I mean, just because it's white supremacy. To say that Lil Yachty is as good as Beethoven? I mean, that's just insanity. That's insanity.
Lil Xan.
Yeah. More like, no. Why don't you go put on
mumble rap?
Yeah. I want to hear some Tchaikovsky 1812 Overture. Put that on. That slaps.
I'm Gonna Shoot Your Mama is as good as Beethoven.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Slap her on the
butt.
It's
just so interesting to hear somebody accuse another black man of, again, inscribing white supremacist power structures.
Right. No, but they won't talk about the blatant sexism and sexual assault that's talked about in rap music all the time, and so many other. And like, you remember Dua Lipa? Remember like DaBaby? DaBaby, like, he goes on stage and he says some apparent homophobic stuff.
Remember this?
And Dua Lipa like freaks out because she had him on her Levitating remix.
Right.
All this. And it's like, if you listen to DaBaby songs, like, all he talks about is doing like nasty, degrading, horrible things to women.
And he's literally killed somebody.
Right. And he's like saying doing all this kind of stuff. Like, being like, I don't even want to say it, the things that DaBaby says in his songs. I mean, you guys can go listen to Toes if you want, you know, whatever. But if you listen, it's like, how can you compare that to Beethoven?
Yeah. It's
and
completely
then you get
comparable.
So upset when it has something to do with a gay person. But then when it's like beating women, it's like, oh, that's totally fine.
Yeah. Joining gangs and sipping syrup is the same as Beethoven. I stand by it.
It's
intellectually
just incredible.
It requires the same mental fortitude.
I mean, to compose a piece of beautiful music.
Yep.
I mean, violin concerto with Tchaikovsky.
That
literally has science
behind it.
Right. I mean, it's just incredible. It takes so much skill and work to be able to do something like that. And to then just like have a producer make a beat and just be like, yeah. No, it's one of the stupidest things. And the guy saying it is white, and he's got that face, you know, the beta face. Where,
accusing like a black man of white supremacy.
Exactly. And the black man, look at his photo.
Yeah.
He's hot. He's a good-looking guy. He's like, obviously, he's awesome.
Yeah.
From just what I can
obviously,
tell.
He's awesome. Obviously from he's this awesome. Tweet alone, this guy's just awesome.
You know, he's a great guy. And then the other guy, just look at him.
I just thought it was an interesting discussion to see something like that happen. It's just so interesting, and it happens all the time. Like, we get called white supremacists all the time. I get it all the time. I could probably pull up a post on my Instagram right now and find six people calling me a white supremacist, probably far more than that. It's just such an interesting phenomenon.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. That's just how it goes, though. There's nothing you can do about that. You know, they're going to continue to say that. You know.
You know what? You know what I call that, Will? A good piece of advice.
Wow. I want them to call me an advice supremacist. A love supremacist.
You're going to find out really soon that Will is an advice supremacist, because we're going to get into Dear Will and Amala. You guys submitted your advice questions to our Instagram, as I said before, which you guys can go follow us at the Amala Epinobi, at the Will Witt, at Taylor Trandall. You submitted your advice questions this morning, and we've got them set up for you. We're going to give you some answers. This first one is from Lindsay Bailiff. Question is, how to debate and keep your cool if you are more emotional than intellectual? Any immediate thoughts?
You repeat the question.
How to debate.
You can't see it?
No, I can't see it. I'm not on it.
How to debate and keep your cool if you are more emotional than intellectual?
Oh, I mean, this is my bread and butter. I mean, this is what I wrote my book about. How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies. You guys can order it anywhere books are sold. Audiobook, Kindle, physical book. And I mean,
were you going to answer the question at all?
No. Amala, why don't you No. The point. No, I send copies all over the world. Doesn't matter where I'll send them. You have to be the one to ask questions. If you don't know all the information about a subject, that means that you have something to learn, which is not a bad thing. It's fine. People want to act like on social media, like they need to know everything, and you have to know everything, otherwise you can't talk about something, which is just, it's just bollocks. You can go and talk to people and ask them questions while trying to insert your facts, the things that you do know about it, into your questions to have a good discussion. It won't be emotional that way, and you're using persuasion tactics that have been proven to work for hundreds of years. And you can actually talk to people and change their minds. And, even if you don't change their minds, at least you're having a conversation where two people can talk without turning it into a huge argument. Mm-hmm. So ask questions. Don't tell people, hey, here's the deal with climate change. Here's why the world is not ending in 12 years, to say, you know, why do you think that the world is ending in 12 years? Talk to them like that, and I guarantee you, you're going to do so much good.
Yeah. Also, there's just no point in losing your cool. It's only going to hurt you, and you've already lost when you've done that. So think of it as, the second I lose my cool, I've lost this debate, or I've lost this argument, or I've lost whatever it is that we're talking about right now, because that will be the case. And there's no point in losing it. And when you lose your temper, you just, all you do is misrepresent your side of the argument. And it's a very clear and distinct way. A lot of people on the left do it, especially in arguments, when we get into arguments. I find myself falling into the trap of, oh my gosh, I want to say something totally rude right now, or just completely lose my ass talking to this person right now. And you have to just tone it back a second and say, is that going to change this person's mind? And really understand that the discussion is not for you to change that person's mind. It's to get them to just question what they believe, and then you go on about your day. And once you've accepted that and realized that losing your cool means you've lost,
right,
you'll be better off.
My one thought on this is just debate the ideas, not the person,
mm-hmm.
and focus less on beating the person in an argument, and more on, if you're already confident of your position or you want to learn more, then similar to what Will's saying, you should be just asking questions and trying to understand the other person's argument and where they're coming from as best as you can, and seeing if there's any holes in your argument or your position. And that is the way to engage in a discussion or quote unquote debate, like in good faith. And that is actually productive, and it makes the other person, it lets their guard down, and you can actually, because they feel heard because you're trying to tease out of them, well, I do want to understand the best perspective,
right,
in your argument in its best terms. And then I can address those once I've stated it as well as you can say it yourself, or I can say it as well as you can. And I mean, you shouldn't feel threatened or be, I don't know, I think your instincts to fight kick in whenever you're framing it as a debate against the person.
Yep.
And then it becomes less about the substance of the ideas or the discussion itself, and more about like, well, I'm just going to win. And so that's where you get emotional.
That's such a good point too. You should approach everything. It's a good thing to be proven wrong, because you've found truth in being proven wrong. So when you go to a debate, go, you know what, if you are right about this particular subject matter, which maybe I don't think you are, but if you are right, I really want to get through every single piece of nuance in this conversation to find out if I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'll let you know. Because when you are wrong, you don't lose, you gain something, you gain truth. So don't be afraid of having debates with people, and yeah, don't allow that to change your temperament. Yeah.
Man who is a master of himself can end a sorrow as quickly as he can invent a pleasure.
Yep.
It's Oscar Wilde for you.
There we go. Beautiful.
Expert here, quoting Oscar Wilde.
Expert here.
Yeah.
Hi.
I did 6 months of an English degree at CU Boulder, so I think, yes, I'm kind of an expert.
Hi.
Okay?
Oscar Wildologist here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just give me a little bit of my expertise.
I actually know a lot about Oscar Wilde.
Yeah, well, Will does. Will does. Next question here from Ethan, TH18. How to deal with missing somebody who dumped you when you did nothing wrong, sad face?
Oh, just get over it. You know, literally
just
the quote that
her.
I just said, a man who is a master of himself can invent a sorrow, or can end a sorrow as quickly as he can invent a pleasure. Be a master of yourself and move on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of the opinion of, you know, if somebody doesn't want you in your life, or is not willing to give you the energy that you're giving them and really contribute the way that you're contributing, why would you want that person around? It's like, why would you be fighting and having all this sorrow towards a person that wasn't going to give you what you needed? So there are other people out there. You will find somebody who is so much better suited to you and has like perfect chemistry with you eventually. Don't get yourself hung up on a person that clearly wasn't right for you. Yeah.
If you keep focusing on it, it's going to turn you into a worse person.
Yeah.
You're going to be sad. You're going to be a loser. Like you need to just get over it.
Yeah. And it's not always, it's not always that you did something wrong or they did something wrong. It can simply be, it wasn't meant to be, it just didn't work out. And whether that's on your side or on their side, it doesn't matter. You guys weren't the perfect match for each other. So don't fall into the trap of just sitting, staring at your wall, wondering, what did I do wrong? How did I lose this girl? And that's going to be the worst thing you could do.
It's probably their fault.
Probably.
I don't know that. I don't know that. But maybe you guys are just not meant to be. Taylor?
Yeah, like breakups, they're painful, you know, when you're emotionally invested in something and you know, it hurts. What we're laughing for.
Breakups. We all have them.
Expert
am
here.
Am I right? What about that breakup food? Am I right?
But no, for real, like, okay, if you get shot by a gun, okay, that's a wound. And similarly, like, a breakup is an emotional wound. And there's pain involved, and it takes time to heal. You can't just continue functioning like normal. Mm-hmm. But the question is, how deep is that wound? And like the obviously the more intertwined your life, the longer it's going to take or whatever. But at the same time, you can't just, there comes a point where you can't wallow in it, and you have to like get rehabbed and get back on track with your life. And you don't want to be Michael Scott when he burned his foot and has the entire world trying to be at, like, give him pity and be at his beck and call. Yeah. And he puts his whole identity in this wound. And I don't, it's not healthy to wallow in stuff. And it's not healthy to, like, you know, just never, your goal should be to heal, get over it, and just be, separate yourself from it enough to where you can like move on and be functional again, and not have your identity staked in this relationship. And so, I would say, I don't think it's healthy to just shove it all down and pretend like you're not bleeding, but it is like, okay, address it and then get healthy. And we can talk about different ways to do that, but, and then move on.
Yep. When moments are bad, that means what happens next is only going to be better. So just keep that in mind. Next one. Dear Will and Amala, what is the best way to text your crush when she is the absolute worst at texting everyone? This is from the Jeffrey Allen. We actually had a discussion about texting this morning.
Yeah. Call her.
Call her.
Call her.
So simple.
It's so easy.
Call her.
Call her. And
you will know immediately whether or not this girl's interested in you.
Right. If she doesn't pick up, then she probably doesn't like you.
If she's telling you she's terrible at texting everyone, she might.
And she
really
doesn't
not,
like you, probably. Yeah.
She's probably just not responding to you and telling you that.
Right.
Yeah. I'm.
Oh, I never text. You would text if you liked the guy.
Of course.
You'd be like, oh my gosh, the love of my life is texting me right now. I need to respond. And like, you'd, right. she'd
it's
be
more
calling
like,
her
oh,
friends.
I can't,
like,
I can't respond too early because then I look thirsty. And so give him 5 minutes.
I just text when I get the message. Just text when you get the message.
Yeah.
That's you know, if you want to talk to the person, you text them.
Let's assume, let's give her the benefit of the doubt and say she's really a bad texter. Give her a call. And immediately you will know whether or not she's interested in you.
Depends on why she's a bad texter.
Yeah.
Like, is she a bad texter because she doesn't like to be on her phone that much? Because she's, like, outdoorsy, or she's actually cool and social?
Mm-hmm.
Is that why? Or is she a bad texter because she's really not cool?
Yep.
And she's, you know, stuck up and just doesn't want to text people back because she thinks she's too good for it.
Yeah, but by and large, if a girl or a guy likes you, they will text you back, especially for because they get the time to like think through what they say and make themselves the most charming and look the best to you. So they will text you back.
This is 2022. People text back. Yeah. Okay, you're not a bad texter.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not. You're just
your
not.
Text messages show inside your brain from your Neuralink and buzz on your Apple Watch and on your phone and on your MacBook. Yeah. So
you can just tap your wrist and it'll respond.
Like, you can pick your response and send it at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So give her a call, Jeffrey. Moving on.
Hey, Jeffrey.
Yeah, Jeffrey, give her a call, don't you? Just call her up. Just kiss her, as Will would say.
Uh-huh.
Dear Will and Amala, do you, Will and Taylor, ever just need a break from the stress and anxiety of politics? If so, what do you do to reset your mind? Thanks. Love the show. This is from Jazzy Schwazzy. Any immediate thoughts?
Oh, you can answer.
I don't find that I'm ever in the situation of, oh, this is way too stressful for me to like keep reading about what's happening. There are certainly stories that get upsetting to keep seeing over and over again, but I'm never like, oh, I need a break from watching this stuff or doing this or doing the work that we do. But when I am not focusing on politics and all the stories that we have to focus on, I watch movies, I listen to music, I write, I sketch, things like that. Things that just don't require you focusing on the world's issues, because they will always be there. I promise you they will be there an hour later. But those are just my helpful ways of just de-stressing and chilling out a little bit. You guys?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. To me, I think this comes from my my faith, but politics and even the goings on of the world are not the most important, ultimate, deepest thing that matters the most and carries the biggest weight in my life. And so, because of that, it's. I don't know. There's a piece that an underlying piece that I feel like I have always with no matter what, how bad the world gets. And anytime I do feel a lack of peace in my heart or soul about what's going on in the world, to me, that's just a signal that I need to take that to God, to pray, to meditate, to parse it out, to gain some more perspective, to realize that, you know, there's a deeper, deeper things going on than what I'm seeing. And I can find, take heart and take peace in that. And, you know, like Will talks about it, like life's not easy as a Christian. And the same thing's true when you're looking at what's going on in the world. And Jesus promised that in this world you will have trials, tribulations, but take heart, I have overcome the world. So in my mind, if I don't feel like I'm living out of that overcoming power, then I need to go to that place and draw from it.
Yeah. No, the faith is incredibly important. You're exactly right, Taylor. I mean, I don't get very stressed. Mm. I mean, I think about Alexander the Great. You think Alexander the Great was worried about going and watching TV on his off days? Like, hell no. He's Alexander the Great, mm-hmm. you know, or Charlemagne, or, you know, William the Conqueror, any of these great leaders of world history. Like they didn't, they went, and every single day they were hustling and working mm-hmm. and working to make their nations the greatest that they could. So for me, I mean, I'm not in the position to be a world leader like that or anything like that. But, you know, in terms of just continuing to work and being on top of everything, you know, I just don't take the time, really. Like, I'm going to Europe for 2 weeks at the end of the month. And basically every day that I'm going to be working, speaking, even though it's like a vacation. But I'm still going to do stuff because that's just all I can do. That's all I want to do is mm-hmm. just work. I want to be working and doing stuff all the time, researching or reading.
Your personality, you kind of feed off of that too.
Yeah. No, I'm the happiest when I am like doing something I am passionate about. Yeah. Always.
I'll say too, like I gave it a big deep answer, but I do like unwind. I love sports. I love working out. I do all that type of stuff. Like when I get off work, usually I turn on my sports podcast and just, that's a good way to like just decompress for me because it's not serious. I play Wordle. I've been playing that till my brain hurts lately. It's so fun.
Yeah. I'll say my thing, I do like, I mean, I don't know if this cooking. Is a good thing. I love cooking, but then also I love gambling. So,
yikes.
But like on your phone. Don't like take that advice. You know, like I play like the blackjack game on my phone. That's like,
With beer money.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
but it's like fake money. It's like fake chips on the thing. I'll play that for like, you know, some time before I go to bed or something. If I'm, you know, well, I'm like listening to a podcast or reading or whatever. So I do enjoy that.
Yeah, we all have our ways.
Yeah.
I have better hobbies than you. Want to bet?
Yeah. Want to bet? $50 right now. I promise. I have the best
one. We went and played pool on Friday.
Yeah, we did.
That was decompressing.
Taylor and I won the majority of the games. Just want to put that out there.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. Seven out of ten. You beat me twice. That is true. Taylor did beat me twice. And then Scott and Taylor beat me once together against me. Right. Pool is my strongest game out of all the games
that
exist. I
beat you like 10 times in pool.
Okay, well, we never rematched, so.
I don't need a rematch. It's already over.
Next.
You want to bet?
Yeah, you want to bet?
Next one. Dear Will and Amala, recently my friends and I were talking capitalism versus communism. I capitalist, them communist. And even after several arguments, I noticed that they keep going back to, but capitalism makes bad people. It makes people greedy and selfish. Any tips, ideas, or info on how to deal with that argument from PokeyJackie17?
I mean, the person who you're arguing with is exactly right. Capitalism does make people selfish and greedy, but so does communism. Mm-hmm. And communism gives people the tools to take complete dominion over your life by being in control of the government or the means of production. And so because of that, the greedy and corrupt get total dominion over you. But when it comes to capitalism, greedy and corrupt people do not have total dominion over you because you have the choice to be able to buy different things. This is a purely capitalist system, okay? Just talking purely capitalism on a capitalist form. You then, if someone else is greedy, then you have the right to say, oh, I don't like this person being greedy, or I don't like this people's business practices. I can choose to go somewhere else. In capitalism, you don't have that. Capitalism and communism, where capitalism accounts for human nature and knows that people are going to be greedy and corrupt, communism does not account for human nature and says that people are naturally born good. Again, this is the difference between how the left views people and how the right views people, where the left views people and says, you know, most people are born pretty good, but there's a few bad people who are making it bad for everyone, where the right says people are born really not good and you have to fight against your natural nature to overcome yourself and become something great, right? And that's what it's really about. That's the difference. That's why the capitalist, we understand human nature and you fight against it, where the communist says, there is, this isn't true. And then they take control over things.
Yeah. And we frame these arguments so much through negativity of what's wrong with communism, what's wrong with capitalism, frame it through positivity. Which system allows for you to do more good? It's certainly not the communist system. Capitalism gives people the agency to give, to be generous, to follow their dreams, to create charities, to help those who are underprivileged. Communism does not give people that benefit. You've been taken away your agency, not only to create wealth and to create product and competition, but also your agency to do good. And capitalism is the system thus far that supports the ability of people to do good more than any other.
Yeah, there is really no thus far. I mean, what else do you
well,
do?
I mean, I'm saying I don't know how many more thousands of years we have as humans on this earth. And I'm sure in those thousands of years, we will create other economic systems that deviate from socialism, communism, and capitalism. So that's what I mean by thus far. Capitalism is the best system.
Anarcho, socio, Camino, capitalism.
There's going to be, Camino? There will be something else.
Camino.
Yeah, there's clones. Yeah, Camino. Kashyyyk, isn't that Skyrim, right?
No, Kashyyyk is where the Wookiees are from.
Okay.
Wait, what is anyways, we, this, Skyrim, I, this went into Star Wars.
Yes, you guys are.
Somebody from comments
deviating.
Talk about whatever Will's asking. Yeah, someone mentioned Thomas Sowell's book, A Conflict of Visions. I think they talk about the differences in human nature on this too. But mm-hmm. I don't have much to add to what you guys said other than I don't think that capitalism makes people selfish. I think that it takes advantage of people's innate selfishness. And like Ayn Rand talks about, people act in their own rational self-interest. Mm-hmm. Capitalism is a system that is built on that assumption that people will act in their rational self-interest. They will try to create something of value that they can sell to better their own situation. That is a system that is based on people acting in their own interest is one that will work in the real world. And a system that is based on the idea that people are naturally charitable and are going to work for nothing in exchange for nothing or just for the better of men of society does not work and leads to them needing to be forced to be productive. And when people aren't free, working out of their free self-motivation to better themselves, but rather out of a state religion to contribute to the state or to just do it to be generous or some way, it just doesn't work. And that's why every socialist and communist country is rife with poverty and people waiting in bread lines and people are not inherently productive because they're not acting their own self-interest.
That's why the mass formation psychosis works.
Yeah.
Because the mass formation psychosis works by giving people a sort of meaning for their lives with the things that they are hypnotized into believing. Because otherwise they would only be acting in that's their own self-interest that they are acting in. It is the virtuous nature that they give, that the hypnotist essentially gives to people to act on.
Yep. And never forget, it's just like, it's not like greediness and selfishness is just like born out of capitalism. And there's a trade-off with capitalism too that you don't have with communism, that in order to facilitate, whether that be greed or selfishness or just ingenuity in itself, you have to create product and you have to create value. That's not a standard for communism whatsoever. So that's another thing. Like there is a trade-off. Even if somebody is extremely greedy and selfish, they have to create a product and some sort of value for the society.
And I'll say too, I don't want to leave it open to say that capitalism is morally good on its own. I just think it's more functional because it's actually consistent with human nature.
Yep.
It's you still need a referee on the field to make sure that we don't have these elites and corporations that just get bigger and bigger and bigger, people who are not practicing fairly, that violate, just like the allowing trans swimmers to compete against females violates the integrity of the competition. You need someone to verify that there's a level playing field in terms of the competition that's going on in the economy, and that's what, in theory, what the government's for, to help level the playing field. But you can easily overcorrect and do too much regulation, and that's bad. So it's a complicated thing. But anyway, I think that just, I don't ever want to say that, like, oh yeah, capitalism is moral and inherently. I mean, we have a video that explores that question, but at PragerU.com. But anyways, I just wanted to add that little caveat.
Right. There's so many caveats and things. We are all learning individuals. Guys, that is the end of Dear Will and Amala. Thank you guys so much for watching. I hope you enjoyed our show today. We are going to be back tomorrow at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern in the afternoon if you guys want to watch more of us. And we'll be back with even more stories. Thank you guys so much for watching. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. And if you'd like to listen to us, go to Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts. Follow us there. Leave us a 5-star review. Let us know what you like about the show, what you dislike about the show, and comment down below, how do you deal with stress and anxiety as it's related to politics? What do you do to sort of unwind and separate yourself a little bit? We will see you tomorrow.
Dear Amala and Taylor, you guys were great.
Wow.
You guys did a good job.
Dear Will and Taylor, you guys did a good job.
I did a better job, wanna bet.
Oh,
thanks, Taylor.
Taylor, you're supposed to finish the circle and go
just kidding.
Will and Amala.
You guys carry the team. I'm just riding your coattails. Everyone knows it.
Thank you guys so much for supporting us. We'll see you tomorrow.
Peace.